So if you would please take your seats. Our audiovisual people are all set to go, so we're all set to go. So, meeting will come to order. Would you please stand and join me for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We have everyone here. Certainly have a full quorum. I'd like to start then this morning with the special reports. And we have reports from both the Sheriff's Department and the Cambria Community Service District Fire Department. We'll start then with Commander Taylor, if you would please come up.
Good afternoon. For the period between December 17th and today, the Sheriff's Office received 290 calls for service in Cambria. Included in those numbers were 58 traffic stops, 11 pedestrian contacts, 12 foot patrols in the main street area, 12 alarm calls that we responded to. We had 4 incomplete 911 calls which required deputies to respond. There were 10 disturbing the peace calls. Those range from loud music to an incident of domestic violence. We had 1 arrest for a criminal threats and brandishing. That was on the 22nd of December in the 2000 block of Fern Drive. Initially, deputies were sent there to the report of a burglary, a man trying to break into a residence. When they got there, what they had learned was that a gentleman identified as Timothy McAlpin was attempting to gain entry to do harm to the resident. McAlpin was armed with a machete and was making threats to them. He left prior to the deputy's arrival. However, they caught up with him later that evening at the Motel 6 in San Simeon. They found him in possession of the machete and a quantity of narcotics, and he was arrested. There was 1 assault with a deadly weapon. That was on the 16th of December. Deputies were sent to the 2000 block of Sandown Place to a report of a man attacking 2 others with a pipe. When they arrived, they learned that the suspect, an Alberto Hernandez Garcia, had attacked 2 men with a crowbar. It's believed that the reason for the attack was that the 2 men had earlier intervened and stopped an act of domestic violence where Mr. Garcia was attacking his girlfriend. The suspect, Mr. Garcia, struck one of the men, who was a 16-year-old male, in the head, and that required hospitalization. The case has been completed and sent to the DA's office for prosecution. We had 10 theft reports, 4 petty thefts from cars, all of the cars unlocked. That was in the Newport, Fern, Warwick, and Pembroke area, and that was on the 12th of December. And then we had 6 petty thefts, all from unlocked cars, that were reported to us on the 24th of January. The thefts all occurred overnight, and it's loose change, it's cigarettes, it's miscellaneous items. I cannot stress, and it's not just Cambria, because we're having the same difficulty in Los Osos, how many crimes we could be preventing if we just lock things up, because these are just crimes, people just trying doors as they go down the road. We had 7 burglaries. The first that was reported on the 18th of January, someone had broken into a storage unit between the 8th and 14th of January, and they stole some power tools. We had 4 burglaries or attempted burglaries that occurred on the 4th of January. At 4 o'clock in the morning, our deputies were sent to an alarm activation at Moonstone Cellars in the 800 block of Main Street. When they got there, they found that the window screens had been removed and a window had been opened. Nothing was taken. While they checked the rest of the complex, they found another window open up at Dolce Frozen Yogurt. Nothing was taken from that location. However, later in the morning, we received 2 reports from Sandy's Deli and JJ's Pizza. Same MO, somebody took the screen off and made entry through the window. In the case of JJ's, they made off with $1,200 in currency. We had a report on January 1 from a victim who said that suspect had smashed the passenger window out of her vehicle and had stolen a lady's purse and its contents. The suspect then entered the opened garage, because she had forgot to put the garage door down, and they stole a number of power tools and other items. On the 30th of December, the deputies were sent to a burglary at the Main Street Grill. Video surveillance showed that a suspect had entered the business through the side patio door and then had attempted to cut open the ATM machine to steal cash from inside of it. There wasn't any cash stolen, and the suspect left. With the video footage from the business, the deputies were able to identify the man as Tyrone Brennan. Now, this is important because Brennan was involved in a number of similar burglaries in our county, including a burglary on the 17th at Avila Grocery and Deli Market, where he entered, broke into the ATM machine, and stole $25,480 in currency. So we were looking for Brennan as he was running around committing other crimes. Eventually, we tracked him down. He was on a flight from San Jose to Honolulu, Hawaii. And fortunately, the phone is faster than air travel. And so when he landed in Honolulu, the detectives from the police department there met him and arrested him. And then we sent some of our detectives a few days later to Honolulu to pick him up and bring him back to California. In the case of this burglary, because it's such a unique MO, some of the things that he was doing, there's a lot of networking that goes on with law enforcement statewide. What we determined is that Brennan is probably responsible for similar burglaries in the Sacramento area and up in some of the Gold Country communities in November of 2015. So this was kind of a statewide crime spree on his part. So he's in custody, and he'll be prosecuted on our charges and probably prosecuted on others. The current staffing at the station is one commander. I currently have one sergeant, 22 deputies assigned to patrol, one school resource officer, and then one rural crimes deputy. And that's the report.
Thank you very much. Do we have any questions, comments from the board? Thank you. It's very nice to see you, Commander. And our next special report is for the Cambria Community Service District Fire Department with Chief Reeder. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm Steve Reeder, Deputy Chief for Cal Fire County Fire, standing in for Chief Schallhoop today. He's on special detail for me up in Sacramento at my request, so you get the second string today for his report. So your fire department was very busy in the month of December. They went on 38 various fire prevention and education activities. Of note in those activities, I think, are important are the commercial fire and life safety inspections that they performed at some, the engine company performed at some of the commercial businesses downtown. And also residential smoke detectors were installed and batteries replaced in many of our residents. So again, 38 activities under fire prevention and education. Several meetings were attended. The Fire Safe Focus Group here in Cambria, that was attended by your fire department representatives, as well as the San Luis Obispo County Mutual Aid Communications Committee that meets quarterly at our headquarters generally, and also the Ad Hoc Committee, Cal Fire representatives there for the Ad Hoc Committee meeting on December 22nd. Operations. A lot of good things, again, happened during the holiday season there in December. Your fire department logged over 125 hours of training in December. Of note in that were they trained on setting up the area command room, the meeting room there at the fire station. And Chief Salhoub tells me that they can have that room set up in about 10 minutes and ready to go. So that was in anticipation of some possible flooding issues that we might have up here during the rainy season. They also had refresher training. Thanks to Cambria Towing, they donated some vehicles, and they had them down at the fire station, and they performed refresher training on auto extrication and vehicle fires. So again, very important training. We're currently in the process of hiring the SAFER grant-funded firefighters as the fourth firefighter on the fire engine, so I'm sure Chief Schallhoop will have more on that in the future. And they're also, lost my place there. There was something about, oh, there it is. Recruitment of the reserve firefighters opened on January 4th and closes on January 20th, so hopefully we'll get a bigger pool of reserve firefighters for your fire department as well, with the anticipation of hiring a minimum of 6 firefighters for that process. And I know Chief Shalhoub has already mentioned it one time, but as I was reading his notes that he prepared for me, I was reflective of the beginning of my career when I promoted to fire captain. There was a fire that occurred on December 9th downtown, 700 block of Main Street, and that was Captain Emily Torlano's first time as a fire captain for your department to be the person in the hot seat on a fire, a working fire, in the middle of the night. And she and her crew performed a stellar job on that fire, so I just wanted to give her my personal acknowledgement, and I'm sure you do too. They did an excellent job and suppressed a fire that could have been much, much worse. So that's the end of my report, and offer up any questions you may have.
Thank you. And no pun intended when she was on the hot seat.
Yeah. No pun intended. That's right.
Thank you. Do we have comments? Yes, I'll start on the right. Director Sanders.
Right.
We're going to get you a nameplate. Yeah. We will get you a nameplate.
Thank you. It's on order. Chief, I also want to acknowledge one of your crews, the fire crew that was on duty Monday night. I was at the Black Cat restaurant with a group of friends. One of them had a very serious medical emergency. 911 was called. The CCSD fire crew was the first to show up. Bill Hollingsworth was the captain. Of course, he's a paramedic. And he took charge of the situation, got the patient stabilized. The healthcare district ambulance arrived a few minutes later, and it was very apparent throughout that Bill was very quietly in charge of the whole operation. They did an outstanding job. Bill had a very, very good bedside manner with the patient's wife, and fortunately everything turned out okay, but very, very good professional job.
Very good. Thank you so much for bringing that up, and I'll make sure that is passed on to Captain Hollingsworth and his crew. Thank
Please
you so
do.
Much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments from the board? Okay. Chief Reeder, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Okay. We'll move now to item 3 on our agenda, and I have asked that we hear from the PROS chair first. And so, welcome, Steve Niffen. Looking forward to a report from you today.
Thanks. I'm not so sure how much of a report I'm going to give. It's just kind of an update. One of the things, Amanda, in the last meeting I watched on TV, I was sensitive to your comment that, hey, where's the PROS? You need to come to these meetings and talk. So I appreciate that. That's true. We've been hiding from these meetings because they're 7 hours long, and quite frankly, we don't want to come to them. But we're happy to come, especially when you move us up in the agenda and we're here, because we're happy to answer questions about what's going on. Nothing is really going on at a very fast pace, so something isn't occurring behind closed doors.
Welcome to the team.
Yeah, that is here. So if I can be so bold, is we have a plan. We're making a parking lot, and I'm assuming we're all aware of those things. I think that the thing that I want to try to emphasize here today, me personally, besides my own personal agenda on crosswalks and different things around town, is the importance of the park. And even though we're going through this rate increase, and even though there's this financial question that hangs over our head at some level, the importance of park and importance of the enclosed green area from which the word paradise comes from, and the importance of that within a society and a community, and that's really what we're focused on, not open space, but an enclosed green space for which kids to play. And there's lots of data out there, and you see it, and it's my passion, and it makes me sick to my stomach when there's a commercial on TV imploring children to go outside and play for an hour. And what that's telling us is the society is moving backwards from playing outside. We our education system wants the kids to touch the glass, to do the technology, to do the computers. I oppose that concept. They need to go put their hands in the dirt. They need to drag their fingernails along and get it underneath their feet. And that's what we're trying to provide to the kids at some level at the community park, is that, hey, we're going to get a field, we're going to do it. Quite frankly, we've got the $100,000, it's coming back. We can argue that whether you want to, but we're going to build the parking lot. But what I can guarantee you, and I'm telling the community, is we'll build the field and the well and the watering system with private money. We're not going to come to this board in this community and ask for money to build the enclosed paradise. We'll build that with private money. I can guarantee you we can get it. It's out there. But we need to go through the process because, quite frankly, rich people don't want to build government projects like parking lots. They want to build cool things like playing fields and stadiums and the whatnot. So as soon as we get the parking lot there and we get that taken care of and we move the dog park over there, we're going to start on a crusade to try to get the field built and move forward from there. So other than that, we take care of the Fiscalini Ranch, and I say this to people all the time. If you don't like the way the Fiscalini Ranch is going, they have meetings once a month. They're the most open group of people. They're accepting. Come to their meetings and say, hey, I feel this way about our 350 acres or whatever that number is. It's a difficult job for them to take care of. It's big. There's a lot of stuff going on. I say this all the time. I don't like taking care of my yard, let alone 350 acres of people running around thinking they can do whatever they want. It's an interesting thing to watch, but they do a very good job as volunteers. They're not getting paid. You know what I'm saying? So there is a process for that, too. I defer a lot of the ranch stuff through the Fiscalini Ranch people. They're the ones that own the Converse, the easement or whatnot to take care of it, and so it's there, too, and I encourage people to go to those meetings. And our meetings are on the first Tuesday of every month. They're very short. I don't believe in meetings over an hour long. My attention span is short, as you can tell by the way I talk. So, you know, if you had any specific questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Well, thank you. I would hope you could show a little more enthusiasm.
Yeah, no,
I was just going to say
I have a whole list of things I didn't even talk about. I want you guys to press the county on the crosswalk up by the nursery. There should be another crosswalk. I've been working on that for 2 years. We've used a lot of different agencies. Press somebody on that. I thought I was close on that. Ask away.
I thank you for the report.
Perfect.
And I agree. I think with you and the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, as my colleague has suggested, I think quarterly updates really are very good. We like to hear from you, and Sheriff, we have...
And we're going to send the other commissioners, too. It won't just be me. Everybody else is going to come
in. I think
there's
would
a
be
lot
wonderful.
More level heads in the group, I can guarantee you.
Well, I can tell you that I am absolutely thankful and grateful to have you here on PROS. I know that Vice President Thompson and I served on PROS for, 6 years or so? And you carry on the good work. And we know it is a persevering patience kind of thing, but you get closer, I think, each way, each step, and your enthusiasm is a big part of that, so I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Do we have comments? Vice President Thompson.
Yes, just to add, there were interviews this past week with three outstanding candidates for the vacant position on PROS, and at their meeting next month, they'll be recommending a candidate to us along with a couple of alternates, and I think all three are just exceptional people and really will be a big attribute to the group. And we thank you, Steve, for all your hard work.
And Director Behringer?
Yes, thank you, and I also think he should be a little more enthusiastic. But one thing that there's a person, I'll bring this up later, at the county that wants to do a walking through Cambria to do a safety check. His name is Jesse, I think. Tony Church, do you know the name of the... Anyway, I'll get it from Tony. But they're looking for citizens to walk the town and do an audit. And it takes three meetings. One's a planning meeting, one's actually walking through town, and another's a critique. So if you'd like to be informed of that,
I'd be happy to. The bike guys are on me, too, about, you know, they've all got their concerns also. So.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
And Director Rice?
Thank you very much. I'm very glad that we're going to be hearing from you guys more. As the only standing committee that we have, it's a group of volunteers that is very passionate about the open space that we have in this town, and I think it's really good to have that kind of expertise, because when you get elected to office, sometimes you know about some stuff, sometimes you don't, and it's really good to know that there's a store of very well-informed folks that know kind of the ins and outs of what's going on with the ranch and this and that. I think it's excellent. I'm very glad. Thank you for including that.
Thank you.
And thank you for your work as chair.
Thanks.
And Vice President Thompson.
Just one more thing. In terms of baseball and soccer, I was involved with youth sports for 25 years, and there's nothing that I'm more passionate about, and I think second only to you in terms of your passion. So I want to really be with you in making this thing happen.
Thank you.
And I'm hopeful for the dog park. We've been talking about the dog park for quite a while. So thank you and all the commissioners for what you do.
I'll tell them. Thanks.
Thank you. Next, under our special reports, presentations, we have then with us today again, we have Senator Dean Flores, and will bring us up to date on activities that he's been working on.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I appreciate the time. Going to take you through our quarterly, if I could, just to give you an update. And I do know that we did submit this for your packet this time, and I do know that we have laid out the meetings that we're having. So I want to thank Commissioner Director Rice for giving us some good direction, and I'm glad it made the packet and makes us work a little quicker. We've got to meet your own deadline, but I thought it was hopefully it was helpful, and we'll go from there. So let me start first by saying, again, going over the scope of work, you know, about five different tasks involved. We'll go to the next slide, Monique. The advisory work, obviously most of what we've been doing at this point has been looking at compliance. We've been looking at what the Coastal Commission has sent you. They did send you a quite detailed letter on some issues. We continue to look at that. We continue to talk to DWR regarding the recycled water project. And, of course, you now are done with your water management plan, and congratulations for that. You did it in a record time, and you did it in the right way. So I want to say particularly thank you to Tim for taking you through that process. That was important for as we move forward. So let me go to the next slide. Monique? No problem. On the grant funding side, we do have an important meeting. I believe your GM will be up. Confirm with Dan Newton. We're going to see just exactly where we are in terms of having our PM, the work that's been done this far, and get a status report in terms of how Cambria is faring moving through the process. We also want to talk a little bit about 1% financing discussions. If you do indeed decide to do the wastewater component to this, the 1% funding at this point is undersubscribed, and I think we're going to have a good talk about that. Why is that? You know, it should be really oversubscribed, if anything. I think we have some thoughts on that when we do talk to the folks there. And, of course, I do know that your staff has been attending the residual Prop 84 proposition funds. And, of course, about this time last time, we had completed the payment with the Division of Financial Assistance and got the grant dollars. Okay. The education and outreach, we continue to talk to Coastal Commission members. We have a tour for some Coastal Commission members who are interested to come to see our sustainable water facility. I expect some commitments from Commissioner Vargas. At this point in time, we're trying to get Janelle Beelin and a few others so they can actually just spend a little time prior to them going to the Coastal Commission and get a good look at the water system that we have had in place. And then let me also say that we do continue to have Senate Assembly staff discussions. Let me just kind of give you a summary of those if you want. It's kind of a recap of what you've done. You know, off the top of my head, I believe probably 69 acre feet, 122 days, 40 hours per week maximum produces quite a bit of environmental benefit, even before, not even counting the amount of water it produces for this area. That's a very good story at this point in time in Sacramento when everybody's talking about overdraft. That is the topic du jour. You guys have actually not only have run out of water once, but you now are replenishing the aquifers, and you're doing it in a sustainable way. And I think that's really our message as we start to talk to policymakers in Sacramento and to commissioners. Obviously, it's a very good, strong story, and I think it is probably you know, the kind of thing that we will continue to do when we talk about education and outreach. On the legislative front, as I mentioned last meeting, I will have a report for you and in your agenda packets for the February meeting, because bill introduction is about February 10th through 19th. Most bills will be in. We'll have a good sense of what will be produced. There is some talk about another water bond. There is some talk about some more recycling focuses, and there's a lot of talk about diesel. So I expect a lot of bills kind of coming up, and I think you guys need to evaluate your thoughts on those and how they impact the district. So we'll probably have a full package for you there. And also let me say that we are still going to have a conversation with State Parks. When we do have your GM up, we want to check in with our Parks Director just to let you know how things are going. It's their last meeting. Give them an update so they're aware. And I know we have some staff personnel changes here, but I think at the state level it's important that they know some of the issues are still outstanding here. And I thought we had a very good meeting when Director Cliff was with us, and I know our GM and Bob was with us when we met with the director. We want to kind of redo that meeting to give them an update. And, okay, let's go to the next slide. On the outreach side, I think I've mentioned this, we're going to be looking at pending bills. We've got some groundwater guidelines and new processes that will be coming out after their final meeting next month. And also, we continue to watch the Coastal Commission monitoring. And as let me just kind of pause on the Coastal Commission for a moment. I'm not going to speak out of turn, but you do know that the executive director, his position is up for renewal or not renewal. I don't know how to term it. It's a hearing in Morro Bay, really about whether or not the executive director continue employment with the Coastal Commission. And it will obviously be a very well-attended meeting, no doubt about it. So I would say that there is lots and lots of discussions about this in Sacramento and probably more so throughout the state in terms of what does it mean for the direction of the Coastal Commission. And we are monitoring that and talking to Coastal Commission members and getting their perspectives. It's all important because we're positioned to get a permanent permit, and I think it's important for us to know the direction that the Coastal Commission is going, even in the future. So we're monitoring that. We're talking to a lot of folks, and needless to say, it should be a very – I would encourage all of you to attend that meeting, obviously. And I do know that through the president, and we have a dinner slated with the chair of the board, which I think is going to be great, getting good education time, good time to talk about the sustainable water success, and more importantly, talk about some of the outstanding issues that are still remaining, and to try to figure out what we need to do through our EIR process to make that a more palatable way to move it through the Coastal Commission. Okay. Let's go to the next one there. So these are the, as you can see, your GM is going to be kind of a little busy. So we're going to ask Jerry to wear his tennis shoes. And we have a lot of meetings set for next week or the week after. We are going to have some targeted meetings with some key senators in the environmental movement, Fran Pavley, Ben Allen. We don't want to check in with Hannah Beth Jackson, obviously, representing the Santa Barbara area. And then we want to kind of talk to the folks over in the State Assembly. We have quite a few meetings there, including Doss Williams, Bill Dodd, and Matt Davenaugh, all interested in this. I've talked to them personally. I want them to meet the GM. I want to get a good understanding of what we're doing here. And Rudy Salas, obviously, is kind of interested because they're trying to figure out what to do with their water system in Central California and how to kind of have systems like you have here to can actually do better things for some of the aquifers, believe it or not, that are inland. So I think there's some sense of how does it work there. We'd really like to know more. So, and then on the administration side, we're definitely going to be talking to Martha Guzman, who is the Deputy Director for Water in the Governor's Office, Dan Newton, who's our bond person and head of the bond program. Zafar has been great with us for our assistance and getting our grant dollars to us, which is really a thank you meeting and trying to get into in his mind about what's upcoming in his department. And then we're going to obviously check in with Janelle Beelin, who works for and at DBWR and also a member of the Coastal Commission, alternate, but we want to check in with her as well. These are confirmed. We are getting more meetings as we get closer to the date, but I wanted to give you at the time of print the meetings that we will be having. And I think that's it, Madam President. I don't think I have any more slides, but I'm available for questions.
Thank you. I really appreciate the update. I think these quarterly reports are, you know, certainly very informative. Yeah. Do we have any comments from the board? Vice President Thompson?
Yes, thank you, Senator Flores, for that report. Very informative.
When you go to Sacramento, please give my regards to Senator Bob Hertzberg. My wife Sally and I worked closely with him on a number of programs when we were in Los Angeles. So I think he'll be very supportive.
Yes, absolutely. We'll do that.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the presentation. Okay. Agenda review. Do we have any deletions or any items we want pulled? Okay. Seeing none. Seeing one. Going once. Mm-hmm. Director Rice?
I'd like to pull item C. I just have a quick question on it. On consent.
Okay, and if it's just a quick question, you don't have to, but if you think it's a longer discussion, we certainly will. It's a,
I'd like to pull it, please.
You'd like to pull it? Okay. So, item C. Thank you. Anything else then on that?
I'm sorry. And D, D also.
Okay,
sorry. I didn't
D?
Mark my agenda properly.
Okay, so item C and D. Okay, so 2 out of 4. All right, thank you. Okay, then we no other things with the consent agenda. Okay, let's move then to item 5, public comment on anything within our jurisdiction to the board, but not on the agenda today. 3 minutes, and let's see. Okay, we will start then with Christina Tobin.
Hi, good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here for the second time. I'm a resident of Cambria for 3 years, and I'm the founder of the Free and Equal Elections Foundation. And I wanted to follow up with briefly speaking beforehand on genuinely and desiring to change the meeting, the time of this meeting. Mr. Stephen Niffen said it best. I don't know if it's 7-hour meetings, but maybe 4 or 5-hour meetings definitely are challenging for a lot of my friends my age in the town of Cambria and others to come that have jobs in the middle of the day. And my hope is that we could change the meeting and address that in the bylaws here with the board in February to 2 times a month from around 6 to 8 p.m. When people of the community are available, and also for meetings to not be so long, because when I was here last time, I was one of 3 people that stayed till the end with Laura and her husband, and I believe they're the only 2 that are known to stay here through the end over and over again. So I think the long meetings are very much an issue, and that will help bring about more community involvement within the board and decisions, which I think is very important in bringing about accountability within a lot of the decisions that are made here. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. And next on item 5, public comment, Tina Dickinson.
Good afternoon, Tina Dickinson, Cambria. I would like to say that Cambrians for Fiscal Responsibility continue to make available forms for those who wish to protest the proposed rate increases to water and sewer for a 5-year period. We have printed them both in Spanish and in English. They are either on green or white forms, but it doesn't really matter what color the form is. It's the content, what is required under Prop 218, the information that's required to turn them in. We have put out now 20,000, paid for 20,000 flyers in the Cambrian and the Tribune, and those will continue today. There should be one, and then for the next 2 weeks. I would urge people, we have volunteers at the post office and at the farmers market when available. Cambrians for Fiscal Responsibility has its own Gmail, cambriansforfiscalresponsibility@gmail.com, where you can, I can electronically, or someone in the group can electronically send you a protest form. Couple of other things. I noticed that on the slow court calendar, and this is not listed under item 12 today for closed session, that the Noonan versus the CCSD, which I thought didn't have legs, as I mentioned, December 17th, but apparently Mr. Carmel is going to be back in court with on that particular case next week, February 2nd. I saw that on the calendar. So there are still, and of course we know LandWatch, so there's activity there on that lawsuit. So I don't see anything in closed session regarding those items, but it doesn't mean that they have to be. The other thing is that the little community park that the CCSD has, the Pocket Park at the end of Bridge Street as a center, I've been out at the post office gathering protests, and it's quite interesting what's occurring there. And it looks like a pot park, quite frankly, and there are people there every day. And I think that you might want to look into that. That is CCSD-owned property, and I'm out there at least 3 days a week, and that's what I'm seeing. So I didn't think that was going to be what that little park was going to be all about. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next on public comment, Ed. I'm sorry. Is it Eby?
Yes, it's Eby.
Ed Eby. Yeah. Welcome, Ed.
Thank you. My name is Ed Eby. I'm from Napomo. I'm a member of the Napomo Communities. I'm a member of the Napomo Community Services District Board, and my board has nominated me for the vacant LAFCO seat that Muriel Cliff held. So if you have not nominated a candidate for that from your board, I would seek your support in voting for me for that LAFCO position. If you have nominated somebody, good luck to that person, too. Thank you.
Well, thank you for joining us, Ed.
Question, Madam Chair. Ed, do you have a resume that's available?
Yes. I can either email it to you or you're going to get it anyway when LAFCO sends out the ballots. I've already sent it. The nomination period closes tomorrow. And then David Church from LAFCO will send out those.
Good.
But I will email to your general manager a copy.
Be a good idea.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next on public comment, Amanda Darling. Amanda Darling with the Darling.
Yeah, hi. I'm Amanda Darling, resident of Cambria. I'm a teacher and volunteer, and thank you for having me here. And I wanted to also support the recommendation to move the meetings to the evening time and shorten, if possible, to make it more inviting to other community members. Thank you.
Thank you. And next on public comment, Jerry McKinnon.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Jerry McKinnon. I've appeared before you many times, but I have neglected to read the fine print. Today I had a little time and I read the fine print. Public comment: in compliance with the Brown Act, the board cannot discuss or act on items not on the agenda. I don't understand how that works, and I hope that our council can educate us on that. You see, the situation is, sometimes, on occasion, historically, for many years, I've come up and blew a lot of smoke, said things and so on and so forth, and you look at me with a frown on your face or a smile on your face or a nod of the head, but there's never any discussion. And I discover that's because of the Brown Act. So my question is, when do you discuss it? Do you discuss it over a barbecue pit someplace? Or does it, in fact, ever get discussed? If it doesn't get discussed, then how can there be community involvement, as the lady suggested? If we come up here and we say what's on our minds that we think you should be aware of as a board, just because we're citizens of the community, maybe there's something said that should get your attention. So how does it get your attention? How does it get on the board, on the agenda, et cetera, et cetera? Is it because Mr. Gruber is a nice gentleman and listens very attentively and decides to put it on the agenda? or how, in fact, does it happen? I would like to have Tim explain to us how the Brown Act works on our behalf as public citizens. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, question. Jerry? Do you know what the significance is of today?
Say again?
Do you know what the significance is of today?
The significance
this,
of
this
today?
This date.
Of this date, the 28th of...
I'm really testing your memory.
Is that the one where the shuttle went up and exploded?
No, it's the anniversary of the founding of the United States Coast Guard.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
You being a Coast Guard veteran, I thought you'd know that.
Well, yeah, it's another anniversary, and we look forward to more of them. And it's not a sinking ship. No. Thank you for reminding me of that. May I sing you the song? Semper Paratus is our guide. We place our trust in thee through search and storm and high old gale. Oh, how we search for thee. Semper Paratus is our guide, our fame and glory to fight and save or fight and die. Aye, Coast Guard, we're for you. You asked for it, you got
all
it.
All right.
All right, Jerry. Very good.
Thank you very much for that, Jerry, and thank you for your service, truly. Okay, now, moving on, and we have no further requests. We do have another request, but Jerry's raising his hand. Jerry Wood.
Yeah. Oh. Okay, he was under here. But
you want to, wherever you want to be.
Well, it's not on the agenda, so I just...
But it's... Okay, it's up to you. All right. Okay, so you're under a public comment here where it's not an agendized item, but it's part of our jurisdiction. Okay, well, that's just fine, Jerry. Okay. Thank you.
Jerry Wood, Cambria. Good afternoon, President Robinette and board members. First, this is very serious to me. I want to explain the red shirt on the chair. Bill Knoop is one of the members of our effort to keep Cambria Fire local. He has a very serious health problem, cannot be here, but he wanted to be represented. He was going to come out of his hospital bed to be here. And we all tell him, no, you can't do that. Otherwise, they won't let him out. So the red shirt represents Bill. And I just want everybody to know that he's one of us. More importantly, second, I've been in conversation or communication with Director Thompson over the last few days and weeks about the resolution to the study that the ad hoc committee is doing. I had some comments that I made to him email. He has got back to me, and I am very comfortable with what his response is relating to having an ad hoc meeting before the thing is presented to the board. But I'm comfortable and confident that I trust what he's doing. So for the lack of not having an ad hoc meeting, so that clarifies that part. Regarding to our ongoing petition effort, to date we have 426 signatures on the petition to retain Cambria Fire and not contract with CAL FIRE. This 426 signatures represents approximately 7.1% of the population of Cambria, 10.7% of the registered voters, and 14.6% of the people that actually voted in the last CCSD election. And as a group, we feel that this is clearly shows the concerns of the citizens of Cambria to retain our fire department and not contract with CAL FIRE. Thank you. Be actually awaiting the evidently a special meeting for this situation, for this issue, and we're more than willing to be there and present our concerns or comments or approvals or whatever it may turn out to be. Thank you.
Thank you. And we do welcome you always to participate and be there. And please send our best wishes for a speedy recovery to Bill.
He's doing far better today than he was Monday.
Very good. That's good news. Good news. Thank you.
Madam President?
Yes, Director Barringer.
Could I suggest that because of the timely nature of the request from the public speaker asking for a reiteration of the Brown Act and what it allows us and not allows us to do, to have Mr. Carmel give a short presentation on that at the moment? You want to do that?
Yes.
Sorry, it's not on the agenda. Only kidding. As you know, the Brown Act is California's open meeting law. It strives for open government and transparency. And I think the public policy behind allowing comment only on items not on the agenda is such that the items on the agenda give public notice of what you're going to be talking about, allows the public to come out, participate, prepare. On the other hand, if it just comes out of a speaker, the public doesn't have an opportunity to prepare. They don't even have an opportunity to participate because they don't know that it's on the agenda. That's the underlying policy. So it fosters, you know, due process, adequate preparation and involvement on issues that are important to the community. The other issue that Jerry raised is how does his important items get onto an agenda? And that's up to you and the general manager as to what items rise to that level and deserve a separate agenda item. So it's a flexible process. Special meetings, on the other hand, you can only comment on items that are on that agenda, and that's because it's supposed to be very focused. Regular meeting strives for sort of a broader subject matter. Special meetings are really supposed to be fairly focused on singular items, and that's the reason why they have that particular process for public comment.
Could I ask a clarifying statement?
Absolutely.
Oftentimes, I feel like I'd like to respond, and I try not to because of the different issues, but the person at the podium also feels, really has a strong feeling that they want some interchange. What level of interchange can happen?
And there can always be a short dialogue. The Brown Act actually says short responses to public comment is within the confines of the Brown Act. Request for additional information from staff, short elaborations. I mean, it really isn't stop, you can't talk about it. It's if you're going to talk about it, make it short. And if it's a subject that deserves a broader discussion, then you agendize it. And that's typically how it does sort of come to an agenda. You see that it does get some legs and a short response. And I know we get so many requests on so many different issues from the public that it's hard to ferret out what you want responses on. We'd be here 9 hours instead of seven. So I think if that adequately responds to.
Yeah. Yeah. So that would allow me to emphasize the fact that these meetings are streamed on the web so people can see them live. They're on slow span, both on TV, and you can download those full videos of each meeting. And also we post all of that information on our website. So just wanted to mention that.
Okay, thank you. All right. No further discussion or items on this, then I would like to go ahead and move to the manager's report. And I don't know why, but I thought consent agenda comes first, but not. Okay, we're ready then for the manager's report.
Thank you, Madam President. Just a few housekeeping things. The Art and Wine Festival is going to be here tomorrow, and they would really appreciate the opportunity to set up as soon as possible. So we have a conference call scheduled at 4:15 with our legal counsel relating to IFF ALS negotiations. So I kind of promised them that we'd be out of here at a reasonable time and we wouldn't have a seven-hour board meeting today. As you can see, they've set up next door. So if we can, I never want to shorten the public dialogue process, but if we could be out of here by 3:30 or 4, that'd be great. The other thing, Madam President, if we could have a moment of silence for Ben Bohr, who recently passed away. Ben Bohr was our ranch manager and was really instrumental in not only the acquisition but the improvements to the Fiscalini Ranch. And it just deeply saddens me. It deeply saddens staff, and I'm sure it's a big loss to the community. So if we could just have a moment of silence on respect for Ben, that would be fantastic.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you.
So I just got done saying I want to hurry through the board meeting today, but I also do not want to gloss over my general manager's report, because what I did is I really wanted to take some time and focus on our goals and where we were with those. And the comments have been made before that, you know, where really are we with these, you know? And so what I did is I tasked staff to prepare for me a detailed summary, and I've worked with them over the last couple weeks or so. But just like to, and I almost might want to read this word for word, but I won't. But I'm going to try to skip over.
I want to introduce it.
Yeah, but if, Madam President, if you would, I think there's some just really important things that that the board and the community and staff should be proud of.
I absolutely agree, and I just wanted to share a brief kind of observation and introduction on this myself as you move into this. Oftentimes, in my experience, and I've worked in many different places along my journey in life where we've had boards and we've had either school districts or other organizations, and it seems that oftentimes it was an annual process that at the beginning of the year we always set the goals. And then everybody goes off on their own directions, and we don't talk about them or really go back the next year and reflect on what happened. And I think this speaks very well to General Manager Gruber's process, and certainly it's been my opportunity as your president to set goals that, first of all, were truly pertinent to the needs of the community at the time. And so it's very nice to actually spend a bit of this time looking back on 2015, see where we are, and see where we're continuing. So I'm going to just begin briefly on this today. I want to begin in the sharing, and I want to reflect a bit on 2015 with some brief observations. It's been a great year. It's been a busy year. And we have momentum on some very important goals for our community. And momentum, I think, is the key word. This year we had, and you're to be commended, many of you, for this particular statistic too in joining us, we have had 22 public board meetings this year. That's quite a few. We've had many ad hoc meetings, and we've had some very important public workshops and meetings. We have a community that is very much interested in being a part of what we do, and we respect that and we welcome that. We've had much interest from other communities regarding our sustainable water facility. The news media, of course, as we all know, has certainly, Cambria has always been on the map. Cambria has been on the map just because of who we are and how our community is. It's a place where people love to come and to visit. But we've had a lot of interest from the media this year, and they wanted to share our story far and wide. We've had visitors support interest and support interest from local state officials and federal elected representatives. And a lot of this has to do with how we have approached keeping our community safe during what is becoming a historical drought. And the story we share with great pride is really all about us. It is our Cambrians who have been so supportive in so many ways and have offered help, encouragement, interest, creative thinking, and understanding. We are all a part of whatever is accomplished each year in this community. And I really wanted to give special thanks, first and foremost, to Cambrians. Because everything that happens here, this board that represents you, the CCSD, everything has its success because you're here to support us, because you are the people who very much show an interest. We need you. We need your creative thinking. We need your involvement. I want to acknowledge the CSD, everyone that's on the staff in any way, and the dedication, the professionalism. I want to also recognize the board that I have the privilege of serving with. I think that we truly work to the good of the cause, all of us. We have our different opinions. We respect each other. Is that your phone? Nope. she's timing me. Was this public comment? No.
I'm sorry.
Okay, but she's timing me. Okay, and that's just who we are. Interesting. But anyway, I think it's good that we take the moment and realize that the goals and the accomplishments and how far we've traveled this year have everything to do with everyone in this community. And so with that, we would like to then see where we've been this year.
Thank you, Madam President. The sustainable water facility has exceeded all expectations during the operations from September 30th, 2015 to December 30th, 2015. The sustainable water facility produced 29.81 acres of water while in production, and 4.92 acres of water went directly into the San Simeon Creek for the purpose of environmental enhancement. We're all aware of where the gradient was when we started the sustainable water facility. It was at record lows. This level was dangerously low, as indicated in the past, and was required that we make operational adjustments that impact both the San Simeon and the Santa Rosa aquifers. Once the sustainable water facility was put into operation, the gradient consistently stayed at above 1 foot in level. In the opinion of the district water supervisor, Justin Smith, and this is a quote, without the sustainable water facility, the district would have been in a situation to either stop disposing of the effluent from the wastewater treatment facility to the spray field or stop production from the San Simeon well field. Either option would have had a significant impact to the end of to the community of Cambria, end quote. This is the second season the sustainable water facility has been able to provide potable water to the community of Cambria during the worst drought in California history. In addition to giving the district the flexibility to properly manage its two groundwater basins while providing environmental enhancement with the water to the San Simeon Lagoon. 2015 goals. Under the leadership of President Robinette, I can state with confidence that 2015 was a very productive and successful year for the CCSD, specifically relating to the three primary goals that were adopted as part of your January 2015 board meeting. Although the district faces challenges associated with cash flow issues and delays in receiving grant funding from the Proposition 84, the overall progress and success of the district can be attributed to the overwhelming community support and a cohesive working relationship between the CCSD Board of Directors, the General Manager, and staff. I've taken the time to detail the status and progress that has been made for the 2015 goals, and sincerely appreciate the guidance and the wisdom of the Board of Directors that you can continue to provide to staff. The goal number one, obtain a regular coastal development permit for the Brackish Water Treatment Facility, now called, I like to say SWOOF. It's really easy to say if you'd all just let it roll off your lips, SWOOF, which is a sustainable water facility. To support a regular coastal development permit for this sustainable water facility, the CCSD entered into an agreement with RBF Consulting, now Micro Baker International Company, on January 7, 2015. Amendment 1 to this agreement was issued on May 20, 2015, following the CCSD board approval on May 14, 2015. In addition to the EIRF efforts, Amendment Number 1 includes certain permitting tasks, such as analysis of extending the lagoon water discharge closer to the San Simeon Creek Lagoon Channel, also involving completion of the Endangered Species Act, Section 7, consultation process, and various resource agencies. Once completed, the consultation process will provide the CCSD with additional levels of assurance that the project is complying with ESHA. And that should be environmentally sensitive habitat area, so I think I skipped out an H there. The following table summarizes the EIR contract cost as of 1/19/2016. Draft administrative EIR review sections are currently being completed, with approximately 75% of the sections having undergone a preliminary review. The additional permitting work called in for Amendment 1 was temporarily placed on hold last September and is currently being restarted. We currently estimate the public review draft of the EIR to be ready in late spring of 2016. The CCSD submitted an application for the regular coastal development permit on June 14, 2014 for the sustainable water facility. Or otherwise known as Emergency Water Supply Project. The subsequent application review letter was issued to the CCSD on July 15, 2014, requesting additional information. The CCSD provided a detailed response to the county on November 7, 2014, which included reference to future EIR completion in an order to fully answer all the questions raised by the county on July 15, 2014 letter. Two extensions have been granted by the county on the CCSD's regular coastal development permit, and the most recent extension ending on June 30, 2016. Because the EIR public review and certification process can be challenged, and in view of the ongoing litigation with LandWatch, it is likely that an additional extension beyond June 30th of 2016 date will be needed. Goal number two was to assess, prioritize, and determine the actual cost of potential funding sources for the first phase of the wastewater treatment plant infrastructure improvement. The state Proposition 1 grant application process can proceed along several avenues. A direct application to the state, which could provide a 35% matching fund, was initially applied for last June. General product information on the proposed $6.8 million wastewater treatment plant project was entered into the state's online FAST system, that's a capital F-A-A-S-T. A project manager, David Balgogan, was also assigned with the state following a June 3, 2015 meeting in Sacramento, which includes attendance by the district engineer and Senator Dean Flores. Past Director Merrill Cliff and Dan Newton, a key water financing division manager, was also in attendance. While working on subsequent online FAST grant application forms, details were requested on how the CCSD was going to finance 65% local shares of the grant. Staff will continue to work on the process. Once additional information is gathered based on the proposed wastewater rate increases, which could be implemented as part of the district's long-term strategy for wastewater plan upgrades and improvement. Staff is refocusing their efforts, as Senator Flores indicated on my 3 or 4 day trip to Sacramento, on Proposition 1 grant funding application process, since the Proposition 84 matter relating to groundwater management plan has been resolved. We are also meeting with the Infrastructure Ad Hoc Committee next week on water and wastewater. Myself, I'll be traveling to Sacramento, as Dean Flores indicated, February 7th, actually through the 10th, to attend meetings regarding Proposition 1 funding, and will update the board on the results of those meetings. I have also attached a letter from the Regional Water Quality Control Board referencing the successful completion of our Environmental Compliance Action, the ECA, that requires the district to complete a 10% design of the wastewater treatment plant specifically relating to denitrification. The completion of the ECA and the components identified within the documentation will also play an integral role in the final design construction cost associated with the wastewater treatment plant upgrades. In addition to the goal identified above, it is important to note that although the district has experienced significant financial challenges during the last year, improvements to the overall infrastructure continue to take place. I have enclosed copies of the wastewater supervisor's monthly reports for the last 12 months to use as a tool to show the community and the board that the staff are not waiting idly by for the new facility to be built and constructed, but instead is focused on continued improvements relating to our current assets. The Regional Water Quality Control Board decided to temporarily suspend efforts relating to the total maximum daily load study for the San Simeon Creek based on the exceptional level of nitrate reductions the staff has been able to obtain through the modifications to the wastewater treatment plant. The Regional Water Quality Control Board wants to further evaluate changes relating to denitrification and the CCSD's plans to implement in the future. This is a critical component of this particular goal because it could impact the overall cost of improvements to the wastewater treatment plant in a positive manner. Goal number three, determine funding sources for the first phase to implement and complete needed projects related to the access of the community park, including grading and drainage swells, and dog park improvements. The CCSD Board of Directors designated fund from the Prop 1A to approve the first improvements to the phase one of the community park. During the period of time we were experiencing financial challenges, it was determined that these funds not be used until the district attained funding from Proposition 1A. At the mid-year budget adjustment that'll come in February, we're scheduled to I said reallocate here, but the funds are still in there. We just need to recommit those funds to the park. A contract for civil design studios for the topography analysis of the East Ranch was signed on April 20th, 2015, and the work began shortly after signing the contract. Work was completed on June 2nd, 2015, and the contract cost was $10,600. In addition, the contract was awarded to Firma on June 30th of 2015 for the grading and drainage plans of the East Ranch Park. Those plans were a total of $18,000. Firma and Civil Design Studios have met with county staff and are working on a conditions of approval. Attached is a timeline with county's a timeline for the board's review relating to those conditions of approval. Additional work has taken place on the East Ranch relating to improvements for the future park, which includes a removal of several large eucalyptus trees in July and August of 2014. PROS Commissioner Steve Nishton has indicated a private individual within the community will be donating $5,000 towards the improvement of the East Ranch. A 30-day public comment period for the East Ranch Park was provided to the community. The CCSD received three comment letters and were presented to Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Commissioners as part of the regular meeting. Additional evaluation of the current dog park location has been done by staff and Chairman Niffen, and it was determined and recommended to the PROS Commission that no additional improvements be made to the existing dog park. And once the grading and drainage project have been completed, that the plans to move the existing dog park to the East Ranch should be expedited. On January 19, 2016, I authorized an additional $1,600 to Firma for the preparation of what they call it, the county calls and requests an environmental monitoring plan for the East Ranch Park. CCSD staff, along with consultants in both Firma and Civil Design Studios, met with county staff to review and discuss the current permitting process that is underway regarding the East Ranch. County staff required that an environmental monitoring plan be implemented as part of the permitting process. That's the status on the current three goals. I just thought it would be important to, everybody's all glazed, kind of glazed over right now, but thought it was important that we just kind of go through those. I have some additional information, and Madam President, I have a few slides, if you don't mind, on the San Simeon Creek, those last heavy rains we got, and I just want to go over those with you. And there's some questions that can be answered regarding the wells in San Simeon by District Engineer Bob Greshens and are part of this General Manager's report. But I did want to just be able to go and show these to the board. Can we start the slideshow, please? PowerPoints. So you can see DeLon standing there. DeLon's kind of a big guy. He's probably about, I don't know, 6 foot or so. That's a debris field that actually came from the upper San Simeon watershed, was caused by the velocity of the water coming down from the top of the tributary. This attributed, was a cause of the San Simeon well field being cleaned, being flooded out. And Bob can go into details of where we are with the cleaning process right now. Next slide. Again, there's a debris field. That's a large tree off to the left. Next slide. There's the debris field right there. Next slide. Some more debris that's come down. Next slide. Some more in the debris field. Next slide. It should be everything. That completes my general manager's report. There is some information if the board has any additional questions from the engineer's report or from the finance manager's report or anything within my general or of myself. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we have any comments, we have a request for public comment from Tina Dickinson.
Thank you, Tina Dickinson. In today's paper, on this item where this photo of the debris collection, I was out there Tuesday. I took up many, many photographs of what occurred. The injection well, it was totally submerged. It was quite a scene. And from Washburn, the vehicle bridge, the turbidity in the water, and I even went up way beyond, east of that. I went to Jan Podoti's laborers' camp. I mean, it was totally flooded. The building, the vehicles were up to about 3 feet in water. So it was up above the district's well field. And then I stood on top, and the pipe attached to the injection well was just sort of floating around there very dangerously.
I might add. So on this business of in the paper on page 31, it says in another twist, Smith, meaning Justin Smith, also said that SS2 is the only San Simeon well that can be used for water production right now. So I, before this came out, I actually had some conversations and email exchanges with Jeff Densmore at the DDW. And what Mr. Densmore said to me in the answering my question, the CCSD San Simeon wells have the following limitations on usage. The wells cannot be operated when there is surface water flowing within 150 feet of the wells. This usually only affects SS1 and rarely SS3. San Simeon Well 3 can only be operated 2 months after the injection well operation has ceased. In another email, when I asked about the wells are still shut down, he said, as of Monday, he said, when I talked to the CCSD Monday, the wells were not operational. However, the water quality samples collected from SS Well 2 and the receded surface water around the well make operation of this well acceptable. Sodium hypochlorite is used for precautionary disinfection and to maintain a detectable chlorine concentration in the distribution system. I wasn't aware that all of our San Simeon wells, and I think a lot of Cambrians were surprised too. Apparently the reporter was surprised that the primary well is SS2 for our supply from San Simeon. Did you all know that?
Yes.
Because you did. You knew that SS2 was the primary well in San Simeon. Well, I don't think a lot of us knew that. In Mr. Flores' report, I just want to point out on page 5, he is still referring to it as the EWS. So I don't know when we're ever going to get straight on that. And I want to say, if you really believe you've been producing water for 2 years, as Mr. Gruber said on KSBY last Friday, I would like to know, why is it that we are still waiting for a draft EIR to come out in late spring?
Thank you.
I would like to know that, please.
Madam President, if we could just briefly, according to what Tim described, when those wells were shut down, we have a pretty elaborate telemetry system. The results of the turbidity and chlorine were sent to the state. Those are public records. There was no violation as far as that goes. And the community was running entirely off the Santa Rosa SR4 well, plenty of water for the community and everything. I'd like Bob to talk a little bit about, I think the whole thing was handled very, very well, starting with Justin and starting with Bob and going out there and shutting those wells down and under the conditions, and it was one of those things. But I'll let Bob comment a little bit more on the operational side of things. Bob, if you would, just talk a little bit about, you know, the bacteriological samples and that 2 month travel time and the 150 feet because the water came in and things like that. So I think we handled it all really very well, very professionally. If Bob, if you could just elaborate a little bit more on that.
Sure. The flood event on 19th of January happened in the afternoon. I was out there with Justin inspecting. He did shut the whole system down once he discovered that it was starting to flood into the area near the wells. Normally, when you're running the sustainable water facility, well SS3 is the closest well to the injection well. That's turned off and uses a monitoring well only. So it goes into a different mode when the SWF is running. The two wells that can draw water are SS2 or SS1 during that period of time, which is typically the dry summer months when you need to run it. So there's a surface water treatment rule that if you have a well within 150 feet of where there's flowing water, you need to have additional treatment facilities, like a filtering system, for example. We do not have that on SS1, so it's normally rested. Whenever there's flow in the creek, we do not run SS1, and that was off on that day. The only well that was running was SS2 on the 19th when the flood occurred.
Justin has an online monitoring system on the discharge of the wells that measures chlorine residual and turbidity. All that data was sent to Department of, I want to say CDPH, it's now Division of Drinking Water. We notified Jeff Densmore, the Carpinteria office. Jeff was very helpful to talking with Justin and assessing the situation with him on the phone. Justin, shut the system down, confirmed that there was no change in the chlorine residual or the turbidity at that point in time. The entire operation, as Jerry mentioned earlier, was run off the Santa Rosa aquifer, which was the SR4 well. For the restart of the system, he left them off. And again, based on some back and forth between Justin and Jeff Densmore, they disinfected all three wells, and then they flushed them, took bacteriological testing, and then waited for those test results. They did have to they did have one positive result on SS3, so that well has stayed offline. It's going to be disinfected again. SS2 did pass, and SS2 is online today, so that's back online. So there's been a lot of back and forth discussion with the Division of Drinking Water, the former California Department of Public Health, because they renamed their agency. I'm trying to think if I've answered all your points, Jerry. Was there another one that was
just one thing on municipal wells? You have what they call a 50-foot sanitary seal that's required, and then we're also mandated to have what they call a wellhead protection plan that we have in place that protects the community in events like this. So again, I think I always want to applaud staff, especially Justin and Bob. And about an hour after the event occurred, it was Justin and I on the phone with Jeff Densmore. And if you recall, I immediately sent the board an email summarizing what had occurred, and also sent it to Kathy Tanner. So we want to be able to take this opportunity and learn from it. And implement it into our any kind of future planning or any kind of a disaster response. So, like I said in the email, the best result from something like this is you take real time data, real time situation, and you learn from it. And I think it was a good opportunity.
Thank you. Do we have discussion from the board? Okay, Director Rice.
Thank you, President Robinette. Thankfully, we didn't have to do anything like a boil water order or something like that. Do we have a plan for how we would notify folks if that were to happen, since our newspaper is once a week? Thank you. I'm very glad they come out once a week, but we don't really have anything. Do we have a plan in case that were to
I believe we have a reverse 911. Is that Chief Reeder? Is that true? We have a reverse 911?
We do have that.
Yeah, so that would be the very first thing. If we were a little more computer savvy, I guess, we would have tweets and things like that. But we would put something on the website. And then there's also the grapevine within Cambria, which would probably be the most efficient way, since it's a miracle how things are discovered within a relatively short period of time, behind closed doors in draft form. So I think whatever happens in Cambria will get around to everybody in Cambria. But something serious as a boil water thing, we would do a reverse 911. But also we would that's something we need to discuss. How would we immediately? And KSBY, we have a really good working relationship with them. The evening news and those type of things, and so luckily there wasn't a boil water notice required.
Okay, thankfully,
and that's what's nice about our telemetry system. The instrumentation that has been installed there, which we never had before, essentially shuts the wells off automatically if that monitoring equipment exceeds the MCL or the maximum contaminant level. In other words, if your chlorine drops below the state standards, I think, which is 0.2. Is it 0.2, Bob, chlorine? Yeah, 0.2, and whatever your turbidity is, it'll shut the wells down. Prior to having that automated system in place, we had to run around and shut things off, which we don't have to do anymore.
So that's great to know. The telemetry was, I'm sorry, I just want to follow through on the telemetry system set is set so it kind of it tests certain things so that when there is a situation, it automatically, is that right? Is that what you just said?
I know there's some improvements that Justin's planning out there that aren't quite done yet, but I know he has continuous monitoring of the chlorine residual and its turbidity, and that's what he was relying on in that event.
Fantastic. Thank you.
And actually, we have both Commander Taylor and Chief Reeder, and they're very involved with the fire focus group. Yesterday, in fact, we had a very comprehensive conversations. One of them, in fact, Commander Taylor may want to speak to this one. What would happen is a good question. If there were something that went wrong and we needed to get the word out fast and maybe, you know, stop the use of the water or boil the water or whatever, Fire Focus, that has reactivated here in this area, very much considers those kinds of events, other events that would be disaster events. And we were talking about the 9/11, which is in place, but I don't know if you want to add anything with the Office of Emergency Services and the coordination of various agencies if we would find ourselves in a really hazardous situation. Yeah. Together they come. Anyone should sit in on Fire Focus if you like. It's really ongoing, very good conversation.
So, if I understand correctly, you're asking kind of how it's all coordinated if we were to
have an event, you know, where there was health risk or something like that. There are several things that would happen concurrently, I think.
Yeah, and I'm proud to say in this county, we should all be very proud of how much we practice our craft together. And it's the same process, regardless of what emergency we're faced with, whether it's a flood, a fire, a big fire, a tsunami event, whatever the emergency may be that we're faced, we go through the same process, and we practice that regularly here in this county together. Law enforcement, fire agencies throughout the county, county OES, we all get involved. So that's I'm proud that I'm partners with our law enforcement sheriff partners on our XSLIMT, we call it. It's a Type 3 Incident Management Team. So we train quarterly and look after emergencies throughout the county, just like you're talking about. We have worked on what was it, the flu?
Bird flu.
Flu pandemic?
Yeah, about 4 or 5 years ago locally. So just know that you're not alone, I guess, even though Cambria is at the end of the cul-de-sac, as we all say. There's a lot of help here to come and support and prop everybody up and go through the process.
Thank you.
And Madam President, I'm sorry, just real quick. I would, and I forgot to say this, but what I would do if there was, and this is a really good question, Director Rice, if there was a risk for public health and safety as it relates to the drinking water supply, the first thing that I would do is be, as General Manager, would be activate the EOC. And that would cause, we'd go up there and as Chief Reeder indicated, you know, it could be set up in 10 minutes, and then that starts the process, and then that brings the resources in. So instead of, you know, the things that I indicated before, the first thing we would do is activate the EOC up at the fire station, and then that would immediately bring us the resources and the tools necessary to handle something like that. I've been close to activating the EOC on a couple different occasions. But, you know, when you do that, it has to be something of a pretty significant event. But something like a boil water, I that would definitely be a activate the EOC mm-hmm. type of thing.
Okay, this is a good discussion. Kind of a good update. Thank you. Okay, Vice President Thompson?
Yes, Madam President. Just a couple points. One, I think that I would refer to the press release that was released today on the Sustainable Water Facility. I thought that was an excellent report. Hopefully that will get a good play in the Cambrian, but I think also if you put it on the website so that it's accessible to members of the community. I think it really does a great job of explaining the positive results that the community has received from utilization of the sustainable water facility. Two other points. Well, I'll just give them both to you. How would CERT be involved in the EOC activity that you just described? And secondly, what's the latest with respect to clearing the log jam, if you would, the 10-foot log jam in the creek? Is get an update on that?
Yes, I'll let Bob comment on the cleaning of the creek and the process, and then let the fire chief maybe comment, if that's okay with Madam President, on the process of CERT and how they would play a role. So Bob maybe first, and then maybe Steve next on how CERT would play into all this.
Okay. As far as the log jam that's out there, it's not in the main channel. Thankfully, the momentum seemed to have pushed it on the north side of the creek into a secondary channel. It's kind of like a floodplain, a wetlands area. I've been calling around to gather information on emergency permitting. Thus far, I know that it'll require an Army Corps 404 permit, which is related to if there's fill put into a waterway. We have to be very careful in how we approach this, because you can get fined, and the fines can be substantial. So we want to clear it out. We believe it's the right thing to do. Our concern is if the wood was to refloat during another major storm, it'd go downstream, maybe hang up on a bridge. I noticed that the campground, for example, had some roadway damage on one of the shoulders of its road, so they could be damaged from something like that if all that wood was to go down in one big slug. So, you know, we want to clean it up, but we want to do it right, and we don't want to get fined in the process. There's a lot of environmental sensitivity there. There's red-legged frog habitat, for example, so it'd probably take a biologist to go out there and make sure there's no species present, and also have a biologist there when any cleanup work is going on, because you would have to stop work if there was some species of concern spotted in danger of being, say, run over by a piece of equipment, for example. We talked about hand removal, and it's a huge undertaking to remove that by hand. We haven't talked to people about what that might entail if we had like an army of people just working out there. The material's pretty large size, as you can see from the photo. That would be a tough job. Justin Smith has had a good discussion with local contractor Tim Windsor about how you could set up different pieces of equipment and move the material out in kind of a daisy chain from one excavator to another. But again, if you put equipment in that channel, it's going to require a 404 permit. And that triggers other things, like you have a water quality concern, a 401 permitting process with the state water board. So we have to get through that. There's going to be questions raised as you're going through that permitting process to make sure you have the mitigations in place. So, you know, our first gut thoughts were, we'll just run out there and get that thing cleaned up. And we said, wait a minute, time out. You know, it's a sensitive area. Let's look at what's required. I thought it might be in the original coastal zone jurisdiction for a minute, and it turns out it's not. I've had discussions with the Coastal Commission that confirmed that it's outside of their original jurisdiction, because if it's in their original jurisdiction mapping, then there's things you can do directly with the Coastal Commission, like maybe request a waiver or get some emergency permit directly through them. So it appears that the permitting will likely be with the county and with Army Corps. Those are going to be the two key steps to get that done. So that's where we're at the moment. We've had some, you know, very general discussions. Jerry, myself, we have to figure out how we're going to budget this. We have to talk with Patrick. You know, where will the money come from to pay for the cleanup effort? So those discussions still need to go a little further. And I hope that gives you a snapshot of where we're at the moment.
It does, but I'm amazed that none of the other agencies that feel compelled to comment upon our EIR feel a need to pitch in and help. Fish and game. Parks, so forth.
I can't speak for them, but you know, and maybe we can make more phone calls to see if there would be some funding from other agencies. I think the we just want to do what's right at this point and take care of it, but address the safety issue, particularly that downstream bridge, and get it removed.
Thank you. I think it is interesting. It's always about balance, of course. And our first, when the pictures that that you shared with us would show us that there's a serious problem there right now. But it is, again, it does take time because we certainly have environmental protections and there is the cost. But do keep us updated because if and when again we have another downpour like that and another kind of flash flood, it's just going to continue to exacerbate the problem. So maybe you can bring it back next time too and let us know what's going on.
Will do. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Director Beringer?
Yeah, I think that you should look at this as a clear and present danger. I think you should do it properly. But if we have a forecast a week from now that's going to inundate that area, I think it's our responsibility to do it. And we should use it as an opportunity to cooperate. I think in the past there's been pointing fingers and so on. Everybody here is involved. Everybody in here is going to have a great opportunity to react quickly. I think that that's the steps I would take. I don't think next month is the time that we should get an update on that. By February 12th, there is a distinct possibility of an inundation. So if we have things planned, and I like the idea of having a daisy chain and having people think ahead of time. So if you have to step outside the box, you're prepared to do so. But it's not a minor item, I don't think.
And I don't want to be misunderstood. An update hopefully has a lot of progress in it, not just a status quo, nothing's happened, for sure. Okay. Director Rice?
Thank you, President Robinette. I just had two quick comments. Thank you. I appreciate the discussion on the emergency responses. And I'd like to thank, in particular, General Manager Gruber for listening and offering a pronunciation for the SWOOF. I think I can pronounce SWOOF. I appreciate that because I did say something about that at the last meeting. I'm glad that you were listening. The other thing is I also appreciated very much the email right away as soon as you knew there was something going on. I'd like to suggest perhaps that it's not a bad idea maybe if we do a kind of buddy system where the GM would call the president. President picks one board member to call who then calls another. So we kind of make it not making any decisions but just notifying because I'm not always checking my email, especially if, like, say, the power is down, for example. And when there's a situation in town, the first thing people do in these situations is call me to find out what's going on. And if I don't know that there's something, like when there was a fire last year out Santa Rosa Creek Road, I didn't find out about it. I found out quickly through an email, but because I'm not always on my email, it would have been nice to at least get a 2-second phone call just to say, hey, there's a situation. I don't need the details necessarily at that time, but it would be nice to know, even just call and say, hey, check your email. But if the power's out, that makes it kind of difficult, and I just like to be informed, and I appreciate that you have been keeping us informed very much. Thank you.
Yes, Director Sanders.
during public comment, a comment was made about the time it has taken to prepare the EIR for the permanent permit for the sustainable water facility. I'm not sure what the inference was that was incorporated into the comment, but I can tell you from my professional experience, 18 months, 24 months, 36 months, EIRs can take a long time, and I'm sure our council has the same experience. So it's not unusual for it to take as long as it has.
Thank you. And we have another request on 6A. We have Jerry McKinnon on public comment.
Jerry McKinnon again. I speak from a platform of ignorance, but my ignorance is based upon a mental picture connected to a timeline, and I hope that we don't create panic. Now, my mental picture is that there's a well out in the creek that pumps water. That water goes through a pipe to the water department. They make the tests on the water department as to whether or not it's of quality. Am I correct so far?
I'm sorry, I missed your first part of your sentence. Okay. Can you repeat it for me, please?
Yeah, it's just public comment, though, so you need to go ahead and finish with your thoughts.
Okay, I just want to make sure what I'm suggesting is accurate. Once it goes through the water department, then it's pumped to one of the three locations where tanks for storage are. Now, what I'm thinking is that if we have polluted water, it's going through a pipe to the water department, and they say, oops, we can't use that water anymore. So now we have three water tanks sitting up there in the hills. How long would that water supply last before we got polluted water in our sink at home? And I think it would be a long, long time. And so the panic of putting up something on the internet right now that we've got to boil our water is a little bit premature. I think that there's a timeline in there that we have opportunity to get the word out in a non-panic mode, because it's going to take a long time to empty out two of the three storage tanks. So we can live with that, I think. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gresham?
I don't know if that was a question or not, but you do deal with things routinely with water distribution systems when a pipe breaks and you have to disinfect. So there's ways to flush isolated sections, and I think the turbidity meter and the chlorine residual meter that we talked about was right at the well field. You know, it's right at the downstream discharge point of the pump. So it was shut down very quickly by Justin in the flood event. But what Mr. McKinnon was talking about, conceivably you could isolate a part of the section if you had to, and you could feed for a while off the storage tanks. The tanks are there for three basic reasons. You have fire storage, you have operational storage, that's kind of the ups and downs that goes with the demand of the town, then you have emergency storage. So you have a certain amount of emergency storage in those tanks to last for maybe half a day without having to pump into them. So that's true, you can do that.
Okay, thank you. I think then we're ready to move on. Yes, I think so. All right, let's do. But you want to...
The CERT question.
The CERT question, did you want to just...
Well, just quickly, I was just curious how CERT would be utilized in this emergency notification system. Maybe Jerry.
I could speak to that.
Okay, someone.
I'm a CERT member. Jerry, yes. Yes, go ahead.
Jerry Wood, I'm one of the assistant coordinators for Cambria CERT. We are geared up and ready to go. All we need, if we activate EOC, we have up to, I think, 18 people that can staff EOC for phone calls and all kinds of, emergencies. We can activate all of our staging areas. We're going to be getting flood training within the next 2 or 3 weeks. So we'll know how to handle that. We've had training from Sheriff's Department on evacuation plans, and we are ready to go. And the way our division is for the command structure, for lack of a better term, I'm the field operations guy. So I will, if we get called out when the rain, I'm very visible. I've got orange and reflectors and everything and boots, but I will also look like a porcupine because I have at minimum 3 radios for communication. We are in the process of getting the small FRS radios to every member in CERT. The staging area managers already have the ICOM radios, which they can get from their staging area back to the EOC. And we have, I believe, 17 hams that are ready to go. So we're geared up. We've been gearing up for the last 2 or 3 months. because we have been advised it's coming, and if it comes, we're going to have to act fast. So we are ready to go.
Thank you.
All we need is a phone call.
And I think it should be noted here in Cambria that certainly the CERT and the work of the CERT has been recognized around the county by now. I think this readiness that you have, and I am a member, not nearly as active as you, but I am going to get my little two-way radio very soon now. I think people should understand, too, CERT is totally in connection under the leadership, under the direction of our agencies. And we are there as a support to them. And so
we do not act on our own.
No, we're not independent agents here.
We're under the control of the fire department for the majority of things and the sheriff department for other things.
Right. Okay. Thank you so much. Mr. Gresham.
If I could just tag on a little bit. I had good fortune of being able to go to a National Fire Academy a few years ago when someone couldn't make it, and I got to fill in, and it was, I say good fortune because it was an amazing experience to see the training that goes on for emergency response, particularly by the Sheriff's Department and the fire departments of the area. They had a grant where a lot of people got to participate in incident command and control, and there's a very good training program that utility people like myself don't go to very often, but we got to play a minor role in responding to a tsunami incident, for example. And there's a very structured approach that how they set up these incident command centers to disasters. That just I just want to mention it because if the opportunity comes up for our fire people or that you support it because it's a very worthwhile effort.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we've had representatives there of late, too. Okay, we have a request at the moment for a nature break. And so I think we will. So let's adjourn for about a 10-minute recess.
That's a request.
That's it.
I had to throw it in there.
Bob, I'll try to do D, and then you can
have to. What I want to know is how come you got to go?
I was going to leave, but if you want me here, I can.
Oh, you can leave.
If you want me to be here, Jerry, I had a question for you, and maybe you
wrote me, I didn't see it. Did you have a chance to think about the question by Jeff Borges about whether affordable housing is a single-family moratorium?
I have, and I know that it is.
Okay, that's kind of what I told him. I said, we're kind of both 90% sure, but we want to kind of double-check things. Should I just tell you?
You mean about the Winchester thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. General Manager Gruber, do we have, we are finished with 6A?
Yes, ma'am. I did send District Engineer Bob Greshens to start working on the clearing of those logs. I think it would be time well spent that he spends another hour or two working on that but I didn't let Patrick go because Patrick probably has some questions he can answer for the board.
Are we finished with 6A? Ready to go? I think so. All right. Thank you very much. Item 6B, any ad hoc reports or other related reports that anyone wants to share? And so we'll start with Vice President Thompson.
Just quickly, I attended the monthly meeting of the Friends of the Fiscally Indian Ranch Preserve, and pleased to report that Joyce Renshaw has been re-elected as chairman of the board. She's done a great job over the past few years and does a great job of conducting the meeting. And so I think the agency will be well served by Joyce being the chair again. Walt Andrus, the vice chair, Bruce Mumper, the secretary, and Curtis Snow, the treasurer. Richard Lee is retired from the board. And new members, Brian Morgan and Susan Loganville, and Susie Siegler. So they are up and running. Their office next to Sandy's Deli is doing well, so look forward to another good year from them.
Thank you. And I would like for them to start sharing a quarterly report, too, if they can. I think it would be very nice to have them, too, for updates. Any other ad hoc, Director Barringer?
Yes, I attended the PROS meeting, but I'm sure that Steve Niffen gave a good pitch on that, so I won't bother with that. I also did go to the Friends of the Fiscally Ranch Preserve meeting for a short while. I went to the Fire Safe Council, but perhaps you can comment on that.
Yes.
I'm ringing here.
You are ringing, Ringer.
I'm sorry.
Very nice.
But I will report a little bit. I did go to the NCAC, and I was approached. Initially, I was approached by a couple of citizens that were really concerned about the flooding in the well field, and I forgot that I had read a message from Mr. Gruber a little bit earlier, and I agree with mentioned to the board there, and I kind of agree with Jerry McKinnon's issue, is that yes, it might have been an emergency, but the professionals were taking care of it. What I didn't know at the time, you know, I mentioned the fact that, you know, our water comes from underground, it doesn't come from the surface water, etc., and that was kind of ad hoc, and I had forgotten about the message that Jerry had given. It looked like everything was fine, so it appeared to me when they were showing me pictures of flooding that I didn't realize the extent of it. And I also learned since then about the 50-foot sanitary seal, and especially the wellhead shutoff. I had talked to Mr. Gruber after that, and I was very glad to know that additional information. Had I known that at the time, I would have been able to give more reassurance to people. There was one constituent that was concerned, you know, that might concern us. One person on the board lives near up San Simeon Creek Road, where the owner of Centrally Grown has purchased some property, had done some grading. And that grading, in fact, has, because of the rainy season, has put mud into the stream. And he was getting, I'm pretty sure that it's outside of our area. It does, in fact, affect our creek. And his main concern was he's getting a runaround in a way. He goes to the county, and the county says, well, we're doing what we can, and you really got to talk to the CCSD. So subsequent to that, I wrote the general manager an extensive email. I don't know, Jerry, if you shared that with people. But just to let you know that there are some people that are afraid, are trying to tie in that mudslide with the quality of our water or an impact on the CCSD. So if the person continues to find no place to find relief, I encourage them to continue to talk to me if he can, because we'll find out who's passing what ball where. So I did that, and some citizens were concerned about the chainsaws all over town and what's happening, and a couple of people have asked Arlen in the county how many people have actually taken care of, taken advantage of cutting a tree down. And there are very few. Some people say one, some say three or four. But the issue is that you can, once Cal Fire marks your tree, and I've had a couple, you can cut it down, and then after you cut it down, you show the proof that it was there, that it's now gone, and that you've replanted in its place. And you have 45 days to do that. So no, we haven't even reached 45 days since December 31st. So they're going to start seeing many more of those evidence of changes. And that particular permit, by the way, is extended for another year. So the county may not be seeing for a long, long time the results of those people that are cutting trees down. I believe most are doing it right. So that's my report from the NCAC.
Thank you. Any other ad hoc reports? Yes. Director Rice?
I usually attend the RAC meeting every month because I find it interesting to get information. Our RAC representatives are Engineer Greshens and General Manager Gruber. And in January, it was canceled because of a bomb threat on a bus in San Luis Obispo. So there was no meeting in January. The next meeting, if people want to attend, because it is a public meeting, it happens at the Palm Street Library in SLO at 1:30 on the February 3rd. So it's always the first Wednesday. Starts at 1:30 p.m. at the Palm Street Library. It is a public meeting. It is the Water Resources Advisory Council, and they advise the Board of Supervisors on issues relating to water in the county.
And our representative is Mr. Greshens?
Mr. Greshens, and the alternate is Mr. Gruber, and those folks are appointed by the supervisors to represent. There's representatives for all of the different areas of the county, for all of the different districts.
Yeah, that all goes back with the integrated regional consortium. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you. I also went to the annual FERP meeting, and I won't comment any longer because I think that I was there in the morning when they were having their annual meeting. And again, it's just a group that's very dedicated to doing the right things with maintaining the ranch, and it's good to see. Okay, then let's move on to item 7.
Madam President?
Yes.
I move that we accept the consent agenda, excluding items C and D, which have been pulled.
Second the motion.
We have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda. We have no, let's see. We do have a request for public comment, but that is on one that we have pulled. So we will have that, and I will call that up after we've done the regular consent agenda. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, that certainly just from verbal passes, the consent agenda has been moved, seconded, and has passed. We do have two items that were pulled today, though, for discussion. And so we'll start then with item C.
Thank you, Madam President. That item was consideration to authorize the general manager to increase the salary incentive on DeLon Blackburn, a wastewater operator 2, in recognition of his exceptional service to the district from 5% to 7.57% through June 30th, 2016, pursuant to the CCSD Payments and Compensation Plan, Article 4, Section 4.2. And I think Director Rice had some questions on this.
Thank you.
Yes.
Just checking. This isn't going to be retroactive. This is just starting January 1st.
Yes, ma'am.
And it's not an additional, it's actually an additional 2.5%, or is it an additional 7.5%?
No, it's an additional 2.5.
Okay. And I just, could you just really briefly speak to why we're doing this? Because there's a disconnect sometimes between the income that we have, the revenues that we have, and the kinds of things that we approve that require expenditures, like when we approved the MOU before we had a new rate structure in place. Right. So well, I just want to address that, even though it's not a huge amount of money overall. I'd just like to hear why we're doing it.
Well, originally the board authorized the 5% pay for him for the exceptional work that he was doing. Since Orlando has left and we have FRM being our wastewater plant operator, DeLon continues to play a critical role. He's really only our only staffed operator down there right now. We have two others. We're moving forward with replacing Orlando as the wastewater supervisor, and we're also moving forward with and got some pretty good applicants for a grade 3 and a grade 2 wastewater operator. So he essentially, although not by title, is really instrumental in helping FRM and making sure that everything gets done. So we only ask for that it be through June 30th and not to extend it beyond that period of time. Humbly, I must say that he came to me or came to staff from Monique the other day, and he's probably listening to this, and said, "Jerry, I'm just really happy with what I make, and you don't even have to give me this." And so I think that says a lot about him. So I hope that answered everything.
It does. I just wanted to make sure he was recognized for the work that he does. And I know that our folks in water and wastewater tend to be, if you look at across the state, similar districts, they are on the low end of what folks usually get paid. And since they have to be trained and certificated, and they can lose their certificate if things don't go right, I really wanted to just, that's why I pulled it. I want to make sure that we recognize that we've got some good folks here.
Here, here. There's no request for public comment on this.
I would move approval of item 7C.
Ms. Moon moved.
Second the motion.
And it's been seconded that we approve item C. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Item C passes. And now we have item D. And if you will just, General Manager Gruber, just introduce item D, and then we have a request for a public comment on item D.
Yes, ma'am. Madam President, item D, 7D, is discussion and consideration to approve agreement to extend engineering services for Task Order 6 with CDM Smith relating to permitting support and environment and engineering support post-construction for the sustainable water facility. And I believe Director Rice had a few questions about this.
Well, let's do the public comment, and then we'll have discussion. And the public comment request is from Crosby Schwartz.
Well, thank you, Madam President. I just was wondering if you could give a little more clarification of the fiscal impact of extending this agreement for a year and a half. The staff report said there are no additional financial impacts, but I assume that over a year and a half we'll be paying CDM Smith something for this extra work. I know there's probably an explanation for that, but if you could just clarify that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam President, that's a good question. So the original contract that was agreement that was entered into by the CCSD and CCSD has gone, that period of time that was specifically indicated in the original contract has been exceeded. So from a housekeeping standpoint, we just want to be able to extend that, because technically once an agreement ends and it's time specific, then you really need to bring it back to the board for approval. With regards to the question of any additional impact, that is a true statement there. We're not modifying the agreement. We're not changing it. We're not adding or deleting to it. We're just asking for an extension, and I think that's a good housekeeping practice. So there's no more funds that will need to be allocated for this.
Discussion?
So my question actually was very similar to Crosby's, which is I'm not exactly sure how it's possible that there would be no further impacts. The other question I have, because haven't we gone over the amount that was already approved for Task Order 6? And then the other question that I had was, the contract has a new deadline, which is in June 30th, 2017, unless sooner terminated. Why are we not making it like when the permit is received or something? Because, I mean, I'm okay with you bringing back contracts that you want to extend. That's not. In fact, I like to know what we're getting into. But it seems to me that's those are my questions. Thank you.
With regard to the end date, it's always better to have a fixed end date rather than a nebulous description of when the end should be. So that's why we picked June 30th.
Having the permit, though, it would be that's a pretty defined.
This relates to several different permits.
Okay, thank you.
Let me go over them if you'd like.
No. Not necessary. I just know that as long as it was considered, whether or not that was. Thank you.
Right.
Okay.
And with regard to the amount itself, I don't know what was originally budgeted, but that amount's not changing. Perhaps Patrick has some better information.
And also, we're also trying to come in under these amounts that were originally agreed upon. We're finding out that in some of the task orders, there may be additional monies available to not utilize. So hopefully we can come in under the amount, which is a great concept, I think. So.
I don't have the exact amount, but it's around $232,000.
Okay.
It was.
Okay. All right. Ready for the motion?
No, I move that we approve item 7D.
Second the motion.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve item 7D. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? No opposition. Item passes. Okay. Do we want to close the doors? I know they're out there working on their. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Let's go ahead. Let's see. We have no hearing today, and so we are ready for item 9A, regular business. And Mr. Gruber, General Manager Gruber, would you like to introduce that?
Yes, Madam President and board members. Item 9A is discussion and direction to staff regarding revising enhanced water conservation measures, water use allocations, and the Stage 3 water shortage emergency. I'm going to hand this off to District Council Tim Carmel with the understanding that I really want to thank the Water Conservation Committee comprised of Director Sanders and Director Rice for meeting and discussing this, and we're hoping that staff can get some clear direction regarding some of their input and recommendations, and then we'd be bringing this back to you on February 12th if it's so deemed to put it on the that agenda.
Madam President, members of the board, this item seeks direction from the board regarding possible changes to the enhanced water conservation measures, restrictions, allotments, and the Stage 3 water emergency condition itself. It's structured as direction because it's a very critical item that has a lot of sensitive issues that are related to it. Additionally, a fact that came to light subsequent to us putting this on the agenda was that the state is actually taking action on February 2nd, the State Water Resources Control Board, to adopt new emergency regulations for the coming year. The governor and the state board already extended the current emergency measures that were in place based on the rainfall at the end of this month through October 2016. So we really thought it would be a benefit to the ad hoc and to the board to see where the state lands on their regulations so we can make ours internally consistent with those regulations. At the point in time that we really think this should go back to the ad hoc so that they can then evaluate that in the context of these new regulations and then come back with a new recommendation, or it could be the same, but at least have the benefit of that additional information. Once we get that recommendation, we will agendize a public hearing, at which time you can actually endeavor to modify the regulations themselves and to take what other steps you feel are necessary with regard to the current laws that are in effect. So with that, I'd also like to point out the drought has not ended. I think we all know that. It's wonderful to see green around us. It makes us feel good and enhances the quality of our life. But the rainfall to this date has been a literal drop in the bucket. We experience it a lot more than most because of our very shallow aquifers that tend to sort of spill over and they empty almost as fast as they fill. So with that, we'll turn it back to you for discussion and direction with regard to potential modifications to the enhanced conservation measures restrictions, the allotment, and Stage 3 itself. Thanks.
Madam President?
Thank you. We have a request for public comment.
Yes, and I was going to say after the public comment, I would like to move to table it to next month, but let's get some public comment.
I think that sounds like the direction. Thank you. So we have a request for public comment on this item from Christina Tobin.
All right, thank you. Just to briefly what I spoke about before on the having the times in the evening, a friend of mine, Andre, who's opening up True Earth, Soto's an owner there. He wanted to stay longer, but it's in the middle of the day, so he wanted me to mention he would like it to be in the evening as well. So I just wanted to reiterate that. So regarding the water hike, just through conversation and really getting involved here recently in this issue, I do feel that the reasoning for the initial hike may not have been of utmost accountability, and I am learning more about that, so I anticipate speaking in greater detail about that in the future. While I'm not against personally a water hike with the state maybe not funding enough, or for that matter too much for water, I do think that the reasoning for doing it should have utmost accountability. It does appear that the finances that the board handles is maybe not managed to the best of its ability, and I think that may be a reasoning for the initial water hike. The fact that the hike is going to be increased again does not seem to be the right direction. It seems more so that we need to control the finances here on the CCSD board. So for that reason, I am going to go ahead and sign the protest, more so on the basis that I really want to see more accountability and transparency in seeing where the money is going. Finally, I wanted to address this briefly while I can. I pulled up an article in the past here from Cambria. Fire chief's resignation from the panel caused a stir. Jerry Gruber, the GM, I'm sorry, that is getting all the information so quickly. Fire chief Mark Miller resigned, which it says Gruber said only if the board deems it necessary to appoint. I support Chief Miller attending the Forest Committee meetings, but I do not support the staff being on the board. I think that it's not appropriate for the board to tell somebody whether they can be on a, on a board such as the Fire Forest Committee, and to hear recently that now Amanda Rice has been, from my understanding, advised by the board to also resign from the Cambria Forest Committee. It lacks accountability, and it's pushy, and it's not appropriate. So I just think that it's important to allow members of the board to do what they want to do in their personal time, and I hope that the board can reconsider allowing, and they should, Ms. Amanda Rice to be on whatever board she wants. So thank you very much for your time. It's very hard to speak about this because it hurts to see Cambria being supported by individuals that aren't allowing people through the constitutional rights to do what they want to do. So I thank you very much for your time. Okay, it didn't beep. So, all right, thank you.
Thank you.
Madam President, first of all, I'm finding it difficult to relate what she said, the last speaker said, to the agenda item. I don't think it had anything to do with the agenda item. But notwithstanding that, I don't know where you got your information. Where do you presume to know that this board told Amanda Rice that she cannot serve on the Forest Committee? Where'd you get that information? No.
President Robinette.
Yeah. I mean, the statement that you made is patently false.
President Robinette.
Did you care to respond to that?
No, we can't have.
Okay, Director Rice.
I just want to be absolutely clear that that it was my own decision to resign from the Forest Committee. I did with a heavy heart, and I support their mission.
Can we move back to the agenda?
I support their mission,
just,
and maybe I'll join.
I just want it to be clear.
Resigning?
Excuse me.
Madam President?
I need to take this back to the current agenda item.
Yeah.
These conversations are not the agenda item. So let's return then to 9A, if we could, please.
I just wanted to be clear.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam President, the Water Conservation Ad Hoc Committee did meet. I think among the two committee members, there is a consensus that perhaps the district can lighten up on some of the water restrictions, but we need to bear in mind that we're still operating under a mandate from the governor to continue to conserve water, and in light of the general counsel's reminder to us that we really are still in a drought situation, it would probably be premature to completely lift the stage three situation that we're now under. So with that in mind, and with the complicating factors that the council alluded to, I think this should be continued until the February 12th meeting.
Thank you. And we have a request for public comment on 9A before we take any action. So Tina Dickinson.
On this item, 9A, it says here, discussion and direction to staff regarding revising enhanced water conservation measures, water use allotments, and the Stage 3 water shortage emergency condition. I really haven't heard much discussion, but my question would be, relating to Director Sanders said you have to still stay within the 25% reduction. I think what we had was 95 gallons per day for each person in Cambria before the restriction to 50 gallons per day. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's what I recall. We were 95 gallons per day per person. What I would like to know, and I would have thought there would be discussion on it, and maybe there is exactly what has the ad hoc committee, or what are they thinking about? Are they thinking 65 gallons per day? I see that we're actually going to be allowed to wash cars, and I haven't needed to water my yard for at least 2 months. Not a drop. There's been so much saturation. The wells in San Simeon are almost 22 feet above sea level. When September 7th, 2013, when this crisis apparently appeared, we had far less in the wells then, and then we had to decide, oh, do we water alternate, you know, days, an alternate day for an even number, odd number, and then you were back and forth as a board. Back and forth, you couldn't make up your minds. Now when we've got 22 feet above sea level, and the rainy season is not over, I would think that you would at least have a number. If I was on an ad hoc committee, or preferably a standing committee, I think I would have been able to come up with something, because it's something that's changeable. If you see that the well levels are coming down, then certainly you adjust it, just as you've done many times before with all kinds of issues. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam President,
if I could just say one thing, too. With regards to your yard, it is really noticed by people on Park Hill. It is beautiful. You have done the landscaping that is drought tolerant, and I just needed to share that with you. Okay, Director Sanders.
Madam President, unfortunately, the CCSD does not operate in a legal vacuum. If we did, we could divine whatever water conservation measures we thought were necessary, and we could repeal those that we think are unnecessary. As the council pointed out, the state is going to come out with some new regulations on February the 2nd. It is only prudent to wait until those regulations come out and then determine what it is the CCSD can do vis-a-vis the water restrictions. Thank you.
Discussion? Okay. I first say Director Behringer.
I if Director Sanders' motion wasn't seconded, I'll second it. Did somebody second it?
Nope.
Okay, so I'll second Director
Sanders.
Okay,
motion?
Was it a motion? You're
yes.
moving? Okay, it has been moved and seconded. Discussion? Director Rice?
I would just like to say that we did have discussions about how we would change the regulations, and because of various other things related to our Code 350 declaration of emergency, we have to make sure that what we're doing is the right thing, not just for water management, but for all of the other complicated factors that are involved. We did basically come to the direction we're headed, and it would be nice if we could at least get a nod on this, that this is not antithetical to what the rest of the board thinks is appropriate direction, is to put in place the emergency conservation regulations that the state, and we were working off of the one that was passed in May of 15. The proposed text of the emergency regulation has been put out, and we'll be working from that to put something together. But the direction is we're going to follow what it is that the state has required urban water agencies to do. It seems like the smart thing to do, and it would lift the 50 gallons per person per day restriction, but it wouldn't remove all the other restrictions that help people save water. As long as that's an okay direction to be headed, that's where we're headed, as far as I remember from the committee meeting.
Yeah, that's consistent with our discussions.
Any further discussion? Yes. Yes.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt, Madam President.
Mr. Carmel?
The 12th is a special meeting that's really intended to deal with the protest hearing for 218, and it actually is going to have a couple of other agenda items on there. I think we're going to have the ad hoc fire report there. And this item really is important and probably should be pushed off to the regular meeting of the 18th, and that would be my recommendation. Staff's going to be tight as it is. So if that motion can be amended to kick it out another 6 days, that would be great.
Director Sanders?
That's acceptable to me.
Mm-hmm. Director Behringer?
I don't like kicking any can down the road. Can we have the ad hoc committee report and then act on it at the next meeting?
Of course. Yeah. I believe it's going to be,
on the 12th, can we have the ad hoc committee at least let the public know where we're going so we can actually act on it the following 6 days later?
Well, again, I looked at a very tentative agenda. The general manager could probably be in a better position to tell you that. But, yes, I believe the ad hoc fire report will be on, and whatever subsequent action is directed would be taken at that time.
I accept the amendment.
Okay, any further discussion? Okay, may we have a roll call vote, please?
Director Sanders?
Aye.
Director Behringer?
Aye.
Vice President Thompson?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
President Robinette?
Aye. Motion passes 5-0. Okay, moving on now to 9B. We'll have General Manager Gruber introduce 9B, please.
Thank you, Madam President and Board Directors. Agenda 9A is discussion and consideration of proposed 2016 Board goals, ad hoc committee and director liaison assignments. It's recommended that the Board of Directors identify and discuss the board goals for 2016 and make any necessary appointments to ad hoc and director liaison assignments. Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you. On this particular item, what we will discuss is my recommendations regarding the proposed goals and the ad hoc committee. So I think you know that the goals that we started last year, all three of them are so significant. And, of course, we've heard many times today it does take time on that regular permit. So we have continued with that goal. Also, the work to be done, certainly with General Manager Gruber and the ad hoc on the moving toward having wastewater improvements and actually taking the next steps, possibly getting funding resources, and the first phase of the water treatment plant improvements is going to continue in my assessment. And then, as we had Steve Niffen here today, talking about the next steps for the parks and PROs and moving toward the community park, I think that also is one that we're in the middle of. We have momentum on. So, on the ad hocs, and my recommendation is that we continue with the ad hocs that are currently active. They're listed here: the budget ad hoc, the wastewater plant improvement ad hoc, conservation ad hoc, parks and recreation open space ad hoc, and we have the fire prevention response ad hoc, the rate adjustment ad hoc, and I would recommend that those continue. Some are moving very closely to completion. I know the fire prevention and response service options is coming to closure pretty soon. So that really will leave us with six, I believe. And looking at the assignments that I would recommend that people continue in their same roles, that would Director Rice would have three assignments, three ad hocs. Director Behringer would have three ad hocs. Director Sanders would serve on two. Director Thompson, after the fire ad hoc, would serve on two. And I would serve on two. So those are my recommendations. And the liaisons, I want to speak to that for a moment, too. That is really a representative, just more of a outreach. It's not an ad hoc, and it relates specifically to things that the CSD and our board of directors has direct jurisdictional interest in. So obviously we need someone that's representing us with PROs, and Director Thompson has been doing that. And the NCAC certainly is a strong partner with us with county. And so that's the purpose of those, and that is mainly to give updates and reports on what we're doing. It's not to make decisions. It is simply to be a liaison between the two agencies. So those are my proposals. So do we have... Okay. 12. Oh, okay, we'll save that. Okay, we have no request for public comment, so we are ready for discussion or a motion.
President Ramanet, I'm not sure that this requires. I think you have the authority to be able to make presentations if it needs to have a motion and vote. I'll move. So move that we accept your recommendations.
Thank you. It's been moved.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded that my recommendations be accepted.
Madam President, I believe that Director Rice has a comment to make.
Yeah, we'll go into discussion. Thank you. Director Rice?
Thank you. Thank you, Director Sanders. Thank you, Director and President Robinette. I appreciate the assignments have been... There's some stability there. I really appreciate that. That's good, because this district does a lot of different things, and it's hard to keep track of them all. Our general manager does a spectacular job of trying to stay on top of all of the various departments. One thing that troubles me, and I did mention this last year, is I would like to see a goal related to the fire department. It is nearly a quarter of our budget, and to not have any kind of ad hoc committee or otherwise related to that once we've dealt with the fire and the grand jury reports and the report that we're going to get next month. It seems to me there's issues in the fire department relating to equipment, there's an item with IAFF negotiations on our closed session today. I think that there is a need, and we shouldn't be ignoring a quarter of our budget, what is essentially a quarter of our budget, with the fire department. I don't know specifically more than, I can't really say specifically more than basically looking at an assessment of what, where are we with the fire department, our level of service, and what is it, and what our equipment is doing, because infrastructure is covered with the utilities committee, with the, I think it's called on here, the wastewater plant improvement, which is infrastructure oversight. If we don't have anything like that for fire, I know that our engine needs to be replaced. It's very old, and there's a lot of issues going on there. I think it's short-sighted to not have a committee that would be looking at that.
Madam President, can I make a suggestion?
I was going to call on Director Vice President Thompson first, and then I'll come to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, just in response to Director Rice's comments, and I think those are well taken. I think the report that will be considered at the next meeting will address some of what you're speaking about, and I think we'll have an opportunity to have a full discussion on fire department issues at that time. And so I think, again, your comments are a little bit ahead of the game, but they're well taken. On the issue of may I just add, on the issue of liaison assignments, I think the article in last week's Cambrian, frankly, was a little bit too much, if you would. There are many organizations that we all and others belong to that we could liaison to. I'm on the chamber board. I don't think we need a liaison to the chamber board. Mm-hmm. American Legion, HART, others. And I think that that certainly, like I said, there's it's not necessarily that we really all have official liaison assignments to activities that are going on in the community. So I concur with the recommendations that you have made here, President Robinette, and so I'll wait for the rest of the discussion.
And Director Sanders?
First of all, let me reiterate some of what Director Rice said by saying, just in my personal view, I think the most important function the CCSD provides for the community is fire and emergency medical service responses. So I'm particularly sensitive to paying close attention to the fire department, making sure that they have the tools that are necessary in order to adequately serve our constituents. Having said that, it seems to me that more than anything, we're dealing with budgetary matters here. And what my suggestion is that we emphasize to the Budget Ad Hoc Committee the importance of the fire department and ask the Budget Ad Hoc Committee to pay particular attention to that function as we go forward through 2016.
Okay. Director Barringer?
President Robinette, I think that a lot of directors are kind of like the go-to people. FFRP knows that if they have an issue, they can go to Michael Thompson. And I do know that the fire department would be very comfortable going to asking Director Rice for assistance and so on and so forth. And I agree with her, actually. The importance of having a go-to person or somebody that holds the pulse or is close to the pulse of the fire department is excellent. I don't think it needs a two-person ad hoc meeting, but I will defer and wait until we get the results of the fire department ad hoc. But I don't think it should be totally washed out the window.
Right. And when the budget is presented to the board, I think all five of us will be paying careful attention to the fire department.
And I would agree, too. Right now, of course, we have an active ad hoc with the fire department. And it seems that the discussion in the future would be perhaps after that report is made, then whatever that report holds, we would follow up with that too. So I certainly think that's a strong possibility, definitely. Any other discussion? Director Rice?
Thank you, President Robinette. I just have a couple of other observations. It's not just about having ad hoc, it's about having a goal. setting a goal that would include the fire department. And what I'm hearing is that everybody does take the fire department as an important role that this district does. So I'm okay on that front. I want to say that on the PROS, if you look on the middle of the page with the ad hoc committee assignments, PROS is not an ad hoc committee. It's a standing committee. So is that a separate from the actual meeting of the PROS? Or is this actually President Thompson and Director Beringer sit on the PROS commission? I'm just trying to understand the relationship between the PROS and this board, because my understanding is that PROS is underneath this board as an advisory capacity related to parks and open space, something that we should have for utilities, infrastructure, and for fire also, and not just for parks, since it's a smaller part of our budget. But that's a whole bigger discussion. But this is what I'm asking.
Can I comment on that?
Yes, you may.
I believe that the direction that the president wanted to have someone actually be there. We don't vote at the PROS, and you're 100% right. They could act independently. But we don't vote, but at least we have some idea between quarter and quarter what's going on. And a lot of times they're asking us for information on what's new with the CCSD. But it is far different than being a liaison with the NCAC when I'm just providing some information, and if some things come up that are CCSD related, we're aware of it. So those are two different things. I would be happy with no longer having representation to PROS, but I think it's valuable, and I think the president believes so.
I think actually, I would like to speak to it too. Mm-hmm. Then, I would agree with you. When you go to the NCAC, it is strictly really to bring them up to date on our latest actions. It's not interactive whatsoever. The ad hoc designation for PROS, for me, has everything to do with the continuing third goal we have, and that is, finally, to have the community park have something, mm-hmm. anything. And I'm hoping it could be the dog park, but those will be discussions the ad hoc, I think, continue to consider and recommend. But I think sitting with PROS, because they are a commission, and having an ad hoc committee that works ongoing and assisting them to get to something with the community park as was really my thinking. That's why I have it.
And I have I'm not complaining. I'm trying to understand the relationship between PROS and this board, because they were created by this board in order to support this board's decisions in parks, unless I'm mistaken.
To advise.
So, like, when they approve a contract, it has to come through the board, right? So
They don't approve contracts.
They did approve it. They did. They decided who was going to do the contract for the grading and the topography.
The way that process works is if it's approved within the budget and it's below the amount authorized by the $25,000, then it's, if it's in the budget, then we go ahead and we move forward. And then PROS approves a contract, I make sure that the board's aware of that through my general manager's reports and updates them. So they don't act unilaterally in the sense that they are provided a budget, and if those items within the budget fall within those expenditures, then the decisions they make are appropriate.
And let me be clear, I was not trying to imply that they are not making appropriate decisions. That is not at all where I'm coming from. I'm trying to understand the relationship. And I know we are also trying to get out of here, but there's a couple of things. This is about our goals for the coming year, and we don't have a long-term strategic plan, so this is it for what we need to do for guidance going forward for our general manager to know what he needs to be doing. I am absolutely pleased that Director Sanders is helping out with the EIR, because his professional experience is really an asset in this situation. My experience on this board has been when there's staff work to be done that it's left to staff, and it seems to me most of the time when we're looking at permitting and completing an EIR, while the expertise of a director like Director Sanders can be helpful, I don't see the policy issues that would be recommended by a committee of the ad hoc permitting, because their policy, there's a goal there that staff work to do. It's excellent that we have an expert on the board who can help out. I'm not sure that there's a policy issue related to that, other than I know everybody wants to get this permit done. I want to get this permit done as just like everybody else. I want to make sure that we've got all of the mitigations in place we need to have. That doesn't mean that it's a policy issue that needs to be addressed by a board committee, is all that I'm thinking. And maybe I don't understand the purpose of a committee, but these ad hoc committees, I know we're low on staff, but the general manager works for the board, and if the board wants to have standing committees, then there's not enough staff. We have to find money to be able to staff that. But I think that this board would end up with what my number one goal would be, which would be shorter meetings. Shorter meetings happen when you have standing committees so that there are board members that are well informed about whatever their subject area is for that standing committee, and they can make well-informed recommendations to the rest of the board and get direction from the rest of the board, and then do most of these kinds of discussions not at the regular meeting, but instead in committee meetings, and we can work through the weeds in those situations. Reducing meeting length by having standing committees, I think, ends up benefiting everybody.
Director Behringer?
Might I suggest we have a motion and a second that we accept what is here. However, I think Director Rice has brought up a very important thing, especially when it comes to the fire department. And my suggestion is that the meeting where we make a decision based upon this present ad hoc committee, that we consider appointing a new one during a transition period or not a transition period, so that we can deal with a lot of the issues that are going to be involved. And so and at that time, potentially make it a board goal to make sure that that from now until the end of this year that we have a focused attention toward it. So that's my suggestion. We can just finish this agenda item, but when the report comes from ad hoc, we consider either extending it or modifying it. That's my suggestion.
Thank you.
Madam President, I think that's a great idea.
I think we're ready for the vote. Okay, I'd like a roll call vote on this, please.
Director Behringer?
Aye.
Director Thompson?
Aye.
Director Sanders?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
President Robinette?
Aye. Motion passes 5-0. Thank you. Okay, moving on now to, we have no additional need for public comment. Well, we do have one coming up, but it's later. All right. We'll hold that one. I have that right here. Okay, so we're moving on then to future agenda items. We've actually, through our discussion just now, already have some sort of on the table. Any further agenda items that would like to be discussed? Yes. Director Rice?
I move that we place an item on the agenda to consider changing bylaws relating to meeting time.
Well, I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. Discussion?
It doesn't have to be February. It could be March.
So basically, that's not specific to changing all the meetings, but having some sort of schedule which mm-hmm. would incorporate perhaps night meetings, and which I've advocated for in the past, and having a varied schedule that would allow more folks to participate more often. I would support that.
I would support that too, and I know it has been requested, in fact, before. And that doesn't mean that now isn't a new day and that we shouldn't certainly schedule one or two and see how it goes. I want to see how it goes.
Right.
And that seems very reasonable. So we will put that on the agenda for a future moment and see how we feel about it and what we might do. Yes,
There's actually a motion and a second, so you might as well go ahead with the vote, even though there seems to be consensus up there. Isn't there?
Oh.
How about all in favor?
Okay. We do agree, I think. All of us do. But we'll go ahead because it was made a motion.
Yeah.
Okay. So, roll call?
That's you.
That would be Amanda.
Director Rice?
Yes.
Director Berenger?
Aye.
Director Sanders?
Aye.
Vice President Thompson?
Aye.
President Robinette?
Yes. Motion carries 5-0. We shall. Now, moving on to adjourning to the closed session, we have a public comment on item 12.
Tina Dickinson, on item 12B, conference with labor negotiators Monique. Pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. I looked up that code, and I can only assume that this will be discussion regarding the salary of the general manager. Of course, I don't know that. This is closed session. But I did go back, and I have talked about closed session, the fact that we have not had closed sessions for all the litigation that's happening, but there has not been a closed session in regular meetings since July 2015. I just honestly find that absolutely remarkable. But I would say this, that if the discussion is going to be regarding Mr. Gruber's and any acceleration of his present compensation and pay, then I would absolutely have to say that Mr. Blackburn, who you voted on receiving 7.5% through June of this year, to me is perfectly acceptable. He earns $105,000 currently, less than our GM, and he has been here since Brian Bodie was here. And so he's been here a long time. So I'm just bringing that up because I don't know. It's closed session. But I just find it quite interesting. And, of course, that government code section leads me to believe that that's what it could be about. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have then no discussion, nothing else. Then meeting is adjourned. And we will move to closed session. Thank you.